Hello, I'm Aaron Lohr, and this is the Endocrine News Podcast. Today, we're talking about the role of androgen receptors in breast cancer as we take a look at an abstract presented at ENDO 2026 entitled "The Impact of Androgen Receptors on Estrogen Receptor-Positive Breast Cancer Microenvironments." Joining me today was the presenter of that abstract, Dr. Dylan Bolton, postdoctoral fellow in the lab of Dr. Jennifer Ricker at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus. Thank you for being here today, Dr. Bolton.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So your study specifically looks at estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. What do we know about its prevalence and mortality rate?
Yeah, well, breast cancer itself is a highly prevalent disease with an overall very positive prognosis these days. This is especially true if the disease has not spread beyond the breast and the regional lymph nodes. It's actually estimated right now that in 2026, that there will be over 300,000 new cases and 40,000 deaths within the US alone. Thus, the overall survival, five-year survival rates end up being around 92%, which is pretty good. When you specifically look at the most common subtype, which is this estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, it's estimated that about 80% of all diagnosed breast cancers will express the estrogen receptor. Now, estrogen receptor positive breast cancer actually tends to have one of the better outcomes among all the other breast cancer subtypes, including HER2-enriched breast cancer, as well as triple negative breast cancer. But despite the overall good prognosis for these women, due to the sheer number of cases, remember about 80% of them express the estrogen receptor, more women will die with ER-positive breast cancer than with any other subtype. The mortality rates associated with ER-positive breast cancer almost exclusively come from the spreading of breast cancer around the body, or something we call metastasis. Metastatic breast cancer is considered incurable and is much harder to treat and has about a pretty bleak five-year overall survival rate of about 38%. Depending on the amount of lymph nodes that breast cancer has spread to at the time of diagnosis, rates of relapse with metastatic disease can be about 22 to 52% of patients over the course of about 20 years. So treating this metastatic disease is really one of the largest hurdles within the field.
And when we think about the typical treatment for estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, what is it and how effective is that care?
Yeah. So estrogen receptor positive breast cancer is driven by the hormone estrogen, which will bind to the estrogen receptor and treat the signals to these cells to grow and spread around the body. That's a lot of the standards of care for these tumors is to treat with this class of therapies known as hormonal or endocrine therapies. Traditional endocrine therapies really come in three kind of main arms. The first one is to block the synthesis of estrogen. This primarily comes from treatment with these things called aromatase inhibitors, which blocks the enzyme that synthesizes estrogens from androgens. The second one are these selective estrogen receptor modulators. And what these do is they antagonize the effects of estrogen by actually competing with estrogen for binding to the estrogen receptor. The third one is something called a selective estrogen receptor degrader, which will bind to the estrogen receptor and trigger its degradation within the cell. Historically, selective estrogen receptor modulator, a drug called tamoxifen, was really the gold standard for many decades. And this provided a lot of survival advantages and reduced rates of recurrence for these patients. However, as a selective estrogen receptor modulator, tamoxifen inhibits ER in some tissues like the breast, but it can also act as an agonist in other tissues like the uterus. So while taking tamoxifen really helps people with breast cancer, it also can increase the rates of endometrial cancer. So tamoxifen is actually still used for premenopausal women where it competes with the copious amounts of estrogen that are produced within the ovaries. However, for postmenopausal women, there's several new drugs that are primarily utilized. These primarily include treatment with a bunch of different aromatase inhibitors. And if those don't work, then they tend to switch to this selective estrogen receptor degrader called fulvestrant. These therapies are actually even better than tamoxifen at preventing mortality and rates of recurrence. And you know, as we progress through research, our, our therapies that we use to treat these patients are becoming better and better at preventing tumor development, progression, preventing recurrence, and reducing overall mortality.
So far, we've been talking a lot about estrogen, but your research has shown that androgen receptors have a significant role in tumor progression and therapy resistance. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting because after you target the main fuel source for ER positive tumors, right? Either the estrogen or the estrogen receptor, you kind of imagine that this is the end of the story, right? However, as I said before, there's many cases where these patients will experience recurrence with metastatic disease many, many years later. So a big question in our lab has actually been, well, how does this even happen? Right. And so the current working model in our lab is that androgens may be sort of a compensatory signaling mechanism that occurs within these patients as a result of taking at these endocrine therapies for a long term. Right. And so as an example of this, right, the standard of care used for aromatase inhibitors is to actually take these for about 5 to 10 years after the primary tumor has been removed. And as aromatase inhibitors are actually blocking the synthesis of estrogen from androgens, one of the unintended side consequences is that you get these buildup of androgens in these patients. All right. And so this may kind of seem surprising to you because androgens, I think, are really traditionally thought of as these male hormones, right? And then although women make less androgens than men, they still make these androgens in the adrenal glands. And so evidence in the field from both our labs as well as others suggests that when you deprive ER-positive breast cancers of estrogen, that these cells can switch to be driven by androgens and the androgen receptor. So some correlative evidence from our lab and others suggests that AR plays this important role in resistant breast cancer. And our preclinical work really supports this idea. Since there are good drugs that target the androgen receptor to treat prostate cancer, we use these drugs and we have tested them both preclinically and clinically. These studies have really suggested that if we target AR, either genetically or pharmacologically with this drug called enzalutamide, and this is an FDA-approved drug to treat advanced prostate cancer, that we get really nice efficacy in reducing both tumor growth as well as metastatic spreading around the body. And this has actually been recapitulated in two different trials. One of the trials was a phase two trial that looked at aromatase inhibitors alone or in combination with enzalutamide, this AR antagonist. And they showed that you got really nice increases in overall survival when you added in this AR antagonist. However, this was only found in patients with high levels of AR, right? So you might need to kind of stratify these patients in order to see the benefit of antagonizing AR. The second one was a collaborative effort between our group and a clinical oncologist at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus, Dr. Anthony Elias. And this is the trial that I actually spoke a lot about at ENDO 2026, which was this randomized stage two neoadjuvant trial for women who had previously been untreated with large AR positive, ER positive, HER2 negative tumors. And in this trial, we compared the standard of care fulvestrant, remember this is an ER degrader, alone versus the combination of an ER degrader with enzalutamide, the AR antagonist. And what we found was the patients in this combination therapy responded more often than the patients with the standard of care fulvestrant alone. And this was determined by this thing called a preoperative endocrine predictive index, which is a predictor of the risk of relapse women will have after treatments with endocrine therapies. So a lot of evidence at both the preclinical and clinical settings that suggests that AR may be a really important mechanism by which some of these ER positive breast cancers are being driven.
And so you then presented recently at ENDO 2026 about some of this. Can you tell us what you hope to learn through the abstract that you presented there?
Yeah, so we have this evidence that AR is playing an important role in driving tumor growth and tumor spreading, but we really wanted to understand how AR and secreted proteins that are under the control of AR transcriptional activity can shape this thing called the tumor immune microenvironment. And so the reason we started looking at that is that oncology research has really moved away from thinking of tumors as purely masses of cancer cells to a much deeper understanding that non-cancerous cells like immune cells, both within and around the tumor, actually play a really critical role in dictating how fast a tumor will grow as well as spread. And so we're particularly interested in studying AR in the context of ER-positive breast cancer, as ER-positive breast cancers are notoriously challenging to target with immunotherapies and have largely failed thus far. And one of the main reasons for this is that ER-positive breast cancers tend to have an abundance of these pro-tumor immune cells and really a lack of anti-tumor immune cells within the tumor. So a big question in the field of studying ER-positive breast cancer has been, how can we alter this tumor immune microenvironment so that these tumors can then respond to these immunotherapies? So when we go back to looking at AR, so while we've accumulated evidence that AR within breast cancers themselves can promote therapy resistance and tumor progression, and that AR within certain immune cells can inhibit their anti-tumor immune function, we really don't know if AR within the breast cancer cells can actually communicate to the surrounding immune cells within the tumor and microenvironment. And so, because we had seen previously that AR is responsible for the production and secretion of multiple different immunosuppressive proteins, kind of hypothesized that inhibiting AR may alter this tumor immune microenvironment to a more anti-tumor pro-inflammatory state.
So, what did you end up doing in the study?
Yeah, so we leveraged these serial biopsies that we had obtained from our clinical trial, where we collected tumor samples before they started the treatment, while they were on the treatment, and then at the end of the treatment regimen, which was at the time of surgery where they got their primary tumors removed. And then we took this multi-pronged approach at understanding how AR influences the tumor immune microenvironment by looking at how RNA transcripts within the tumor change with treatment, as well as using this high-plex immunohistochemistry to track changes in immune cell populations over time with treatment. And so, differentiating from traditional immunohistochemistry, which allows for the detection of one or maybe two protein markers per section of the tissue, the multiplex imaging platform that we utilize enables us to detect up to eight unique protein markers within a single section of tumor. And this gives us a lot of power to detect changes in numerical abundance and spatial distribution of multiple cell types, both tumor cells as well as multiple types of immune cells, within the same tumor over time, and then we can compare the two different treatment regimens.
And what did you find?
So, focusing first in on this RNA analysis that we did, what we found was that the RNA from transcripts from within the tumors in both our treatment arms showed decreases in things like cell cycle and ER response pathways. And you might expect this from treating these tumors with an ER degrader. Remember, the ER degrader was in both of the treatment arms. So this is something that we really thought, we really expected. However, what we found was we saw multiple increases in different inflammatory and immune cell activation gene sets. And these were specific to the treatment with the fulvestrant and the enzalutamide, which is the AR antagonist. And so this kind of suggests to us that inhibiting AR specifically is what was resulting in the increase in these different pathways within the tumor. Additionally, these immune pathways that we observed were increasing after treatment with the fulvestrant and enzalutamide came from both innate and adaptive immune cell types. And so this kind of suggests that inhibiting AR has this broad impact on immunity within the tumor. When we zoomed in to look at the changes in immune cell populations over time, what we found was tumors from patients that were treated with the combination, the AR antagonist and the ER degrader. What we found was we saw decreases in multiple inhibitory pro-tumor immune cell populations. And similar to the RNA analysis, we saw that this was really unique to the combination arm and was not observed in the fulvestrant alone arm, right? Additionally, when we compared at the time of surgery patients' tumors who had received the combination versus the fulvestrant alone, we looked at these things called tertiary lymphoid structures. And what we saw was that patients with the combination arm had more tertiary lymphoid structures than patients that had received the fulvestrant alone. And so tertiary lymphoid structures are these really amazing, fascinating immunological structures that start to form in non-lymphoid tissues when the tissue is undergoing chronic inflammation, which is the case in tumors, right? And TLSs allow for rapid antigen presentation and immune cell activation in direct proximity to the tumor. And so many people have found that in a variety of different tumor types, that the presence of TLS correlate positively with response to chemo and immunotherapies. Thus, our preliminary results are showing that the combination of fulvestrant and enzalutamide help to invigorate this tumor immune microenvironment by both decreasing the number of pro-tumor immune cells within the tumor, as well as increasing these anti-tumor immune structures.
These are some very intriguing results. I mean, how might your findings impact future clinical care?
Yeah, they're really cool, and our ultimate goal is always to determine whether AR inhibitors could be used to treat patients with recurrent ER-positive breast cancer. However, the relative effectiveness of an AR inhibitor within ER-positive breast cancers may depend on several factors, including the amount of local and circulating estrogens, if the tumors are already resistant to aromatase inhibitors or other ER-targeting therapies, as well as the relative amount of AR to ER found within the tumors. Our future work is really going to be focusing around whether AR inhibitors can be combined with different immunotherapies like immune checkpoint inhibitors, which are approved for in triple-negative breast cancer. But these immune checkpoint inhibitors they're notoriously ineffective at treating ER-positive breast cancers. So our preliminary data is really suggesting that AR inhibition may sort of reawaken this immune microenvironment by reducing the pro-tumor immune cells, increasing the anti-tumor immune structures. So whether or not AR inhibition could be effectively combined with immune checkpoint inhibitors really remains to be determined for some of the future studies. Yeah.
So you touched on this a little bit already, but promising research like this always begs more questions. So what do we still need to learn about androgens and T cells? And are there any concerns about other health effects of androgen inhibition?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of fascinating questions that stem from this work. One open area, as I kind of alluded to earlier, is really understanding this AR-dependent crosstalk between the cancer cells and immune cells. While there are reports of AR affecting tumor immunity, both from within the cancer cells themselves, as well as directly within the immune cells, whether or not the cancer cells can send these AR-dependent signals through the local immune microenvironment to immune cells to alter their function kind of remains completely unknown. So we don't know whether the observations we saw from our clinical trial with the changes in these immune cell populations is a direct effect of AR within the immune cells, or whether this could have been some sort of crosstalk between the cancer cells and the immune cells. Additionally, we don't really know if the changes in the immune cell populations have any functional impact on tumor progression and reducing recurrence. While there's evidence in the literature, we really need to go back and functionally validate these things in our different model systems. So follow-up studies are definitely required for this. In terms of health concerns for androgen inhibition, we've primarily used this AR inhibitor called enzalutamide, which is already FDA approved. In advanced prostate cancer. And this is actually what we use a lot preclinically, as well as what we used in our clinical trial. This drug is generally well tolerated in women, with most of the side effects being either mild to moderate effects, typically consisting of things like fatigue, nausea, hot flashes, as well as joint and muscle pain.
I want to thank Dr. Bolton for being our guest today and sharing his fascinating work with us. Best of luck with your future research.
Great. Thank you so much.
And that's all for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm always on the lookout for exciting new topics to cover on the podcast. If there's something you'd like to see on a future episode, let me know by emailing me at podcast@endocrine.org. That's podcast@endocrine.org. I'll be back soon with another fascinating dive into the world of endocrinology. Until then, thanks for listening.